Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is the Win Tracy recording, and it is 4:55 p.m. and that is British summertime. And today is July 17th. Well, I thought that today I would focus on Asia, basically because Chinese growth seems to be faltering, and that's going to have knock-on effects in other markets. Then also thinking about where. You have Janet Yellen saying that there could be knock-on effects for the U.S. economy, but that she doesn't think there's going to be a recession. So you see that U.S. markets are in mildly positive territory as we start the day. But I think then I would also like to share my experience with a couple of different companies. So let's first, though, kick off with what's going on in China. Growth is slowing down. And the government is promising additional stimulus. Now, the Politburo will be meeting later this month. So I think markets are beginning to price in the potential, at least, that there will be an announcement of additional stimulus. But the hope that's being expressed is pretty mundane. And there's still a lot of uncertainty. And that's very much reflected in the stock market, where the CSI 300 remains under pressure. The sequence of lower rally highs has been in place now for more than 2.5 years. It's still distributing below the 200-day moving average, and it has a lot of work to do in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And of course, that is within the context of a market which hasn't really gone anywhere for a decade. But the H-share index in Hong Kong is steadying above the 6,000 level, which also provided support in early 2022. So there is more enthusiasm being expressed about the potential for stimulus among the kinds of shares that foreigners can buy rather than the mainland market can buy. And then because of the growth expectations that are narrowing in China, then copper took a hit today and it was down about 10 cents on the COMEX contract. So I think the most important thing here is that we had the big surge in 2020 and 2021, and then we had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and then the subsequent rebound encountered resistance in the region of the lower side of the overhead trading range and subsequently has held a sequence of lower rally highs. So this isn't really bullish action. We've had a couple of false starts and we've had a couple of times when the price has rebounded, but it isn't holding. And every time we get a rally, it gets knocked back again. And this is reflecting slowing global economic potential. And I think this the phrase Dr. Copper is overused. What this is more a reflection of is what's going on in China, because China represents about 50% of the market. So I don't think it's a reflection of the global economy, but more the Chinese economy. I know that there are lots of people who think that demand for copper is going to double over the course of the next decade, but that might well be the case from the renewable energy sector, but it is assuming that demand is a constant in China. And that is not, and it's in fact, it's not just demand is a constant, but demand growth is a constant. And that is by no means the case if they do not pull the trigger on a big round of new stimulus. So copper remains in a distribution, and until it breaks the sequence of lower rally highs, then that has to be the base conclusion. And then, of course, that will also have knock-on effects for how OPEC makes decisions about how much supply they're going to bring to market. So oil prices broke out last week, and that was a clear breakout from a well-defined range and subsequently have not sustained the move above the $80 area. It came straight back down again on Friday, extended that decline in here today. And now it's testing the upper side of that range that it just broke out of. We're still in a very tight environment for oil. And if this is a failed upside break with a push back down into that underlying range, well, then it could quite easily go straight back down and test the $70 area and then potentially break lower. The most important point here is that there's a medium-term downtrend which remains intact, and every time it has got up to test the region of the 200-day moving average, it has failed. And we're still in an environment where the excess demand that characterized the rebound in 2020 through to early 2022 is now unwinding. So this is putting downward pressure on some of the industrial and energy commodities. And then when we think about natural gas in Europe, then it has completed the round trip from exceptionally high levels back in 2022 in the immediate aftermath of the invasion, and subsequently has now come right all the way back down to test the upper side of the underlying trading range, and it is pulling back from the 50 euro level again right now. But that has to contrast quite clearly with the more bullish action that we're seeing in the agricultural commodities. So the DBA ETF, the Invesco Agriculture ETF, which, excuse me, it's not an ETF, it's a fund, and it's futures based. It is steadying from the region of the 200-day moving average. It's been ranging for the last year, but there's definitely been an upward bias to trading more recently. And Russia today announced that they're walking away from the agreement that they would allow Ukrainian wheat exports to exit the Black Sea. So there is the potential then that the wheat price could move higher from here. It did not move though in here today in response to that news. So there's still the expectation that there might be some form of agreement made, but it's still a tight environment and very susceptible to the kinds of black swan events that would mean we could get shocks to supply. And the price around the 600p, excuse me, cent level is at the upper side of that underlying rounding base formation that was completed in 2021. So this is an area where we might anticipate some support starting to come back in. And then let's also just look at some of those other grains and beans. So soybeans, having had quite a bit of volatility following the most recent contract change, was in mildly negative territory in here today. So still a question here whether it's going to push back above the 200-day moving average and that psychological 14 cent level. Then corn is rather intimately related to demand for gasoline, and the corn price has been quite volatile over the last several months and was in mildly negative territory today, but does look like it is trying to build support here at the lower side of this 2.5 year range and the upper side of the underlying base formation. So then, with some volatility in the commodities markets, the dollar having been really quite weak at the end of last week, has just been inert in here today, hasn't really moved at all. It's testing the psychological 100 level as well as the 1,000-day moving average. Now, I think it is worth also looking at an alternative to the dollar index. So the Bloomberg Dollar Index gives greater weighting to the renminbi and the rupee. And here we can see that it has dropped through the 1,000-day moving average and it is well inside the underlying trading range. So this is, I think, a better picture of just how weak the US dollar is right now. With the potential that we are reasonably close to the peak of the interest rate hiking cycle, gold prices bounced last week, but we're pretty inert in here today. But then we're also now starting to see, with some renewed interest in gold, some of the gold shares are beginning to perk up a bit. So, for example, Greatland Gold in the UK was among the better performers on Friday. Now it's in negative territory in here today, but the peak from back in 2020 was north of 35p, and it's currently around 7. So an 80% decline is certainly beginning to raise questions whether there has been enough of selling and there's been a marked loss of momentum over the last year. Now, that doesn't mean that it's going to break higher imminently, but certainly there are plenty of gold shares that have pulled back in a violent manner. And now the bigger question is, are we going to see gold break on the upside, and will it take the gold miners with it? I think that there is that's practically a rhetorical question, because the gold miners, particularly those that have some form of production, or the higher cost producers that would move into a profitable position with somewhat higher gold prices, those are likely to be among the most levered to a higher gold price. So then the bigger question is, are we in a cyclical or a secular bear market for the dollar? And I think the base case has to be that it's at least a cyclical and most likely a secular bear market for the dollar. I think it is almost too much to expect that a recession will be avoided, particularly when we have yield curve spreads that are as inverted as they have been at any point in the last several decades, and have been inverted for a sufficiently long time that the tightening credit conditions are beginning to be felt. Then, when we think about the reporting that we've had from some of the luxury goods companies, so Richemont announced today that their sales within the USA have been falling, and that they had a good quarter in China, but then with expectations of slower economic growth, they're not anticipating that that's going to persist. And the share is pulling back in here, now testing the region of the 200-day moving average. But Richemont was far from the most overextended. Now let's think about Hermès. So one thing I think is most particularly important is that it's been one of the most consistent trends in the world. And there have been several occasions when it has pulled back into the region of the 5-year moving average. So if we just simply look at the 60-month moving average and go back to as much history as we have available, the share listed in, I think it was 1993, and there hasn't been an occasion when it has sustained the move below the 1,000-day or 60-month moving average. But the moving average today is at 1,026, and the price is at 1,912. So the share could just about halve and still be in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. To me, at least, that looks like a particularly inopportune time to think about initiating a long position. So it could easily engage in a process of mean reversion on a growth scare from the global markets, and still the trend over the last 30 years would still be intact. And that, I think, more than anything helps to highlight just how aggressive a move we've had on the upside, because the share doubled in the space of only about 9 or 10 months. And I think that is an extraordinary feat for any company, but particularly for one where they have a limited supply mantra. So what they, of course, are trying to do is to create the illusion of limited supply. And that works really well for them. But of course, for these aspirational type companies, or I guess the companies that are selling aspirations, what they really need is spending power. And without lots of spending power from lots of individuals, then they're not going to do as well as they have been doing. But because they also tend to have pricing power, they've been among the biggest performers in the era of quantitative easing. Because even with the price rises, they have not kept pace with the volume of cash that has been created. Now, as China slows down, and of course, because of geopolitical tensions, we are seeing that other markets are doing better. So the Nifty index in India has exceeded its previous peak, breaking out once more and pulling away now from that range that began in 2021. Then in Singapore, the market has been going sideways for a decade, but it is starting to firm from the region of the 1,000-day and the 200-day moving average. The Vietnamese market broke back above the 200-day moving average in the last several weeks, and it was also in positive territory in here today. So, as investors begin to look at ex-US markets and thinking about where they might park investments if the dollar is in fact rolling over beyond the short term, then the higher growth markets in Asia are likely to be among the beneficiaries. Then in Brazil, there is speculation that interest rates are going to be coming down pretty soon because the economy is faltering. And that, I think, is the necessary catalyst to begin to force the central bank to begin to cut interest rates because after having a I guess, and I've been of the view that Brazil is going to be a template for what we can expect from other countries. They raised rates faster than anybody. They got inflation down faster than anyone. Now they're experiencing a growth scare, and their central bank is going to be put under pressure to cut interest rates. And that, I think, is what is happening. And we're going to see exactly the same kind of activity happening just about everywhere else. So the Brazilian market was in mildly negative territory in here today. And the Brazilian real, having been really very firm, was a little bit softer in here today as well, and but not in a dynamic manner. And I think investors will be thinking about will we have the as fiscal stimulus begins to become more of a factor, and as monetary stimulus becomes more of a factor, will we then have a recovery in industrial resources? So even though we've looked at those industrial resources charts and they look bearish in the short term, there is the potential for a recovery in the advent of greater economic and fiscal stimulus, but we're not there yet. And between now and then, there's a growth scare is likely to build in more parts of the global economy. Then, when we look at the European markets, the Euro stocks, excuse me, Europe stocks 600 has continue to hold the region of the 200-day moving average. But when we zoom in and we just look at the last few months, there's a well-defined sequence of lower rally highs, and it is easing back in here today. So we're still in an environment where I think it's a little bit risky to just think that that stock markets will be completely immune. But nonetheless, the Nasdaq 100 is still quite steady, and investors remain willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the largest companies in the world. And this trend remains in place, and it continues to march higher, back towards the peaks from 2021. Now, we have quite an overbought condition in the short term. Investors are at least seem willing to look over the chasm of a global slowdown and are willing to assume that corporate earnings, particularly for the largest companies, won't be affected at all. I think that is certainly bordering on just bordering on the sublime in terms of market sentiment. But as long as the sequence of higher reaction lows remains intact, as long as there isn't a clear downward dynamic, I don't think anyone's going to be particularly worried. But I would be willing to short more. And take out more short positions when we do see the first downward dynamic, because I do think that we have inverted yield curves, we have slowing global economic activity, and eventually that will catch up with something and there will be an accident somewhere. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.